pregnant woman has come to you for her first antenatal appointment. She's perfectly healthy with no signs or symptoms of thyroid disease. You arrange the gamut of blood tests, you know, full blood exam, blood group, HIV and all of that. But do you also check her TSH or thyroid stimulating hormone levels to screen for thyroid problems? And if she ends up having subclinical hypothyroidism, do you treat it? This week, we look at the evidence, the guidelines, and the history to try and answer this question. Hello, and welcome to the Evidence-Based Medicine Podcast, where each week we pick a medical topic and delve into the evidence to give our patients the best care possible. This week, subclinical hypothyroidism in pregnancy. The story of treating subclinical hypothyroidism in pregnancy unfortunately follows such a common formula in medicine. Here's how it goes. Step 1. Data from observational studies suggest a strong association between an abnormal blood test and disease. Step 2. Guidelines jump on this data very quickly and make strong recommendations to do this blood test on everyone and to fix the blood test if it's abnormal to try and reduce said disease. Step 3, the practice quickly becomes the standard of care. Step 4, only after this has become standard of care is a good quality randomized controlled trial finally conducted to actually test the recommendations by the guidelines to see if fixing the abnormality on the blood test actually improves the disease. Step 5, the randomized controlled trials show that fixing the abnormal blood test has absolutely no impact on the disease to which it is associated. This formula happens all the time. It's actually sad. And the worst part about this formula is step 6, that it often takes years or decades for practice to change now that we have good evidence that what we were doing was wrong. Let's follow the history of treating subclinical hypothyroidism in pregnancy and see how it fits this formula to a T. But first, let's define our terms. So subclinical hypothyroidism is when the TSH, or thyroid stimulating hormone, is elevated, but the thyroid hormone, or T4, is within the normal range. So there must be some low thyroid hormone process going on because it's stimulating TSH to make more of it, but the system is compensating and maintaining normal thyroid hormone levels. There's another term called hypothyroxemia. This is the reverse, where the T4 is low, but the TSH is within the normal range. Then you can get a low T4 plus a high TSH, and this would just be called straight up hypothyroidism. But I would argue that you could even split this into two, symptomatic hypothyroidism and non-symptomatic hypothyroidism. Non-symptomatic hypothyroidism would be where the patient has a low T4 and a high TSH, but feels completely fine with no symptoms or signs of hypothyroidism whatsoever. So let's go through our little formula. Step 1, data from observational studies suggest a strong association between the abnormal blood test and disease. We've known for over 100 years that hypothyroidism is associated with adverse pregnancy and neonatal outcomes, like mental retardation. That's when it was discovered that overt hypothyroidism, where patients were iodine deficient and had symptomatic hypothyroid disease, was associated with impaired brain function in the baby. But what about if the women are totally asymptomatic but have a low thyroid hormone or a high TSH? Well, in 1999, two studies came out to show that even in these women, there is an association with poor brain development of the child. One study measured the TSH, or thyrotropin, or thyroid-stimulating hormone as it's also known. They measured it in 25,000 pregnant women. For the women with the highest TSH levels, the top 0.3%, they followed them up well after their pregnancy. 62 women had the top TSH levels, and they matched them with women in the cohort who had normal TSH levels. They followed them up until the child was 7 years old, and did like 15 tests on their development, including intelligence, attention, language, reading, school performance, and things like that. They found that IQ scores were 7 points lower in the high TSH group, and while only 5% of those with normal TSH levels got scores of 85% or less for all those developmental tests, 15% had scores of 85% or less in the high TSH group. So a 10% increase in the number of kids who had low IQ scores when their mothers had a high TSH during pregnancy. And here's the kicker. When they compared those who were treated for their high TSH versus those who weren't treated, they found the kids of those who were treated did better. So a pretty good association. But these women weren't randomized to be treated or not, so it brings in the potential for a heap of confounding factors. Things like, were they treated just because they had better care? And the fact that they were treated was just a surrogate marker for better care? And so on and so forth. Now, this study was looking purely at the TSH. Another study, also published in 1999, measured the thyroid hormone, or T4 levels, and followed them up in a similar fashion. They followed 220 otherwise completely healthy pregnant women, and then followed the baby up until 10 months of age. And they found that babies born to mothers with lower T4 at the time of pregnancy also did worse on psychomotor development scores. So there seems to be a pretty consistent association. Those who have overt symptomatic hyperthyroidism seem to have babies with lower developmental scores, and even healthy pregnant women who just have either low thyroid hormone or a raised TSH also seem to have kids with worse psychomotor scores. Other studies have shown that women who have these altered thyroid function tests also have associations with preterm birth, placental abruption, neonatal ICU admission, gestational diabetes, and other adverse pregnancy outcomes. The problem is, there was absolutely no evidence that fixing the thyroid hormone levels leads to better outcomes. But that did not stop step two of our association formula from going full steam ahead. Step two, guideline committees make strong recommendations to fix the abnormal blood test to try and reduce the disease. Well, it certainly hasn't been universally accepted in all guidelines, but some big guidelines have definitely taken this information and said every pregnant woman should be tested with a thyroid function test, and any high TSH or any low T4 should be corrected, even if they are completely asymptomatic. In 2005, for example, the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, the American Thyroid Association, and the Endocrine Society came out with a joint statement that every pregnant woman should be screened for subclinical hyperthyroidism and treated. One review found that based on the thresholds that some of these guidelines were recommending treatment for, 15% of all pregnant women would need to take thyroid hormone. Now, some guidelines took a more on-the-fence stance. A publication by the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners stated, until prospective data are available to guide management, some clinicians may choose to consider low-dose thyroxine replacement, which is safe in pregnancy, aiming for TSH values within the trimester-specific reference ranges in all women with subclinical hypothyroidism. While other guidelines, like the NICE guidelines and the RANSCOG and the ACOG guidelines, advised against routine screening of thyroid function. If I can achieve but one mission, it's to convince you guys that guidelines are not collections of the best available evidence. They are subjective interpretations of the evidence, and that is why guidelines differ so drastically, as this case perfectly illustrates. Step 3. Practice becomes standard of care. Certainly, in my experience, I've noticed that pregnant women get treated for their subclinical hyperthyroidism, especially if they end up under the care of an endocrinologist. But I'm sure it's not universal, but I think it's very common. So, now let's move to step 4. Randomized controlled trials are finally done to test whether fixing the blood test abnormalities will actually reverse or improve the disease to which they are associated. Let's start with a study called the CATS study, or the Controlled Antenatal Thyroid Screening Study, which was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2012. Now, this was the first ever randomized controlled trial to compare outcomes on babies when you screened and treated their pregnant mothers for any of the hypothyroidisms versus if you didn't. The study took 22,000 pregnant women and checked their TSH and T4 levels within the first 16 weeks of pregnancy. They were then randomized into two groups. The first group was the screening group. In this group, the treating team were given the results of the TSH and T4 tests straight away. And if the TSH was high or the T4 was low or both, they were put on thyroxine. The second group was the control group. And in this group, they took the blood sample but froze it straight away. They stored it at minus 40 degrees Celsius and only after delivery thawed it out and measured the TSH and T4. Pretty clever design, actually. See, they wanted to compare those treated for subclinical hypothyroidism to those not treated. They needed to figure out who was hypothyroid in the no treatment group, but what if these women or their clinicians, when finding out that they were hypothyroid, decided they wanted treatment? It could make the control group not much of a control group. So by freezing the blood and only checking it after delivery, they could find out who was hypothyroid in the control group but not have to deal with this issue. Genius, actually. So 390 women in the screening group tested positive for hypothyroidism, either with a high TSH or low thyroid hormone or both, and so were treated. While 404 women in the control group tested positive for hypothyroidism but were not treated because the results were only available after delivery. The primary outcome was cognitive function of the babies born to these mothers at age 3. And there was no difference between the groups. The IQ score was the same whether you had abnormal thyroid hormone levels and you got treatment, or whether you had abnormal thyroid hormone levels and you didn't get treatment. There was also no difference in preterm birth, birth weight, and all of that sort of stuff. Now, this study included women who had subclinical hypothyroidism with a high TSH and a normal T4. It included women who had hypothyroxinemia with a low T4 but a normal TSH. And it included women who had asymptomatic hypothyroidism with a low T4 and a high TSH. And if you had any of these conditions, whether you were treated or not, there was no impact on your child's development or on any pregnancy outcomes. So this came as a bit of a shock, but the guidelines still are no changey. But then in March of 2017, the second randomized controlled trial looking into this had come out, and it was bigger and badder than ever. Sorry, a bit dramatic. This trial was also published in the New England Journal of Medicine, and Brian Casey was the lead author. Now, it was actually two trials. One trial was testing whether treating subclinical hypothyroidism during pregnancy improves cognitive function in their baby. And because it's so confusing, I'm just going to define subclinical hypothyroidism one more time. A high TSH, but a normal T4. And the second trial was testing whether treating hypothyroxinemia in pregnancy improves cognitive function in the baby. And hypothyroxinemia is when thyroid hormone is low, but the TSH is normal. But if they had true hypothyroidism, which is low T4 and high TSH, they were excluded from the study, even if they were asymptomatic, which is a shame, really. I guess they excluded them because, like many of us and many endocrinologists, they assumed, well, they needed treatment. But maybe they don't. The CAT study included women who had low T4 and high TSH and still found no difference in overall developmental outcomes. Oh well. So, these guys screened 100,000 pregnant women with thyroid function testing before 20 weeks gestation. They found that 6% of them had subclinical hypothyroidism. They went, whoa, that's a lot of people we'll need to follow up. We just don't have the manpower. So they raised the cutoff of the TSH level to only include those with a TSH of greater than 4 microunits. 3,057 of them ended up having subclinical hypothyroidism with this cutoff, and of these, 677 fit all the inclusion criteria, gave consent, and underwent randomization to either get thyroid hormone therapy or not. That was study 1, the subclinical hypothyroidism study. Study 2 was the hypothyroxinemia study. 3,000 of the 100,000 women ended up having hypothyroxinemia, where the T4 level was low but TSH was normal. 526 of those underwent randomization. They did a run-in phase, which some people will be hating on, but I don't really mind them. It's when a study will first give everyone a week or 2 weeks of treatment and exclude anyone who has any side effects or who doesn't take the treatment. In this case, they gave them 7 days of placebo tablets to see who actually took the tablets, and they excluded those who didn't take them. Some people don't like run-in phases because they feel it's not an accurate representation of what's happening in the real world. Like if you exclude those who don't take their tablets perfectly or who have side effects, clearly not what's going on in the community. But I don't mind them because it makes the data cleaner. You want people randomized to thyroxine to take the damn thyroxine. Otherwise, it may make a mess of the data. So let's start with study one. As I said, 677 pregnant women with subclinical hypothyroidism were randomized to either take 100 micrograms of levothyroxine or placebo. Every month they got a blood test and adjusted the levothyroxine dose if they needed, in order to keep the TSH level in the normal range. Now this is what I love about these trials. They did sham dose adjustments in the placebo group as well. For every real dose adjustment they did with the levothyroxine group, they did a sham dose adjustment to someone in the placebo group. Isn't it great? The goal was to keep the TSH level between 0.1 microunits per liter and 2.5 microunits per liter. The primary outcome was a full-scale IQ test at age 5 in the baby that eventuated from this pregnancy. Secondary outcomes were other cognitive, motor, and language scores at 12 and 24 months, and a bunch of other developmental tests like behavior and social competence, and these were done at different stages of follow-up. They also looked at a bunch of pregnancy and neonatal outcomes as well. So what did they find? Well, actually, let's first go through the methods of the second trial and then we'll go through the results altogether. So the second trial took 526 pregnant women with hypothyroxinemia and randomized them to either 50 micrograms of levothyroxine or placebo. Again, they tested their thyroid function every month and adjusted the dose to keep the T4 levels between 0.86 and 1.9 nanograms per deciliter, which is between 11 and 24.5 picomoles per liter. And again, they did sham dose adjustments in the placebo group as well. So, let's go through the results, starting with pregnancy and neonatal outcomes. Well, there was absolutely no difference. No difference in preterm birth, preeclampsia, placental abruption, Apgar scores, admission to neonatal ICU, nothing. No difference in either of the studies. So whether you had a high TSH or whether you had a low T4, there was no difference whether you were treated or not. Now let's move on to the neurodevelopment and behavioral outcomes. Amazingly, they were able to follow these kids up to the age of 5 in 96% of the cases, which is a really great effort, pretty remarkable for such a long period where so much is happening in the patient's family's life. Well done, guys. So, what did they find? Well, absolutely no difference in IQ scores, and no difference in any of the other developmental scores either. Nothing. And again, this was in both trials. So whether you had a high TSH or a low T4 doesn't matter. Fixing it does not improve anything to do with the pregnancy or the baby. So what's the bottom line? Treating either subclinical hypothyroidism or hypothyroxinemia with thyroid hormone in pregnancy does not have any impact on pregnancy outcomes, such as preterm birth, preeclampsia, gestational diabetes, or placental abruption. It does not have any impact on neonatal outcomes, such as Apgar scores, admission to neonatal intensive care units, stillbirth, miscarriage, or neonatal death, and it does not have any impact on the child's neurodevelopment or behavior. So there you have it. Now, I wonder how long it's going to take for those who adopt this practice to now change their practice. All right, that's it from me. Thank you so much for listening. The show notes and references can be found at www.ebmpodcast.com. Please leave a review on iTunes and please subscribe to my YouTube channel where I make short evidence-based videos, www.youtube.com/DrDanMD. Great. I'm Daniel Aronov. I'll speak to you next week.